requested that I assist him as he was leaving the body, so I had to go along with his request as out of service to my great godbrother, Srila Bhakti Tirthamar. So anyway, so I'm here to serve the Vaishnavas and any of you who need anything spiritual, not money, but any of you who need anything spiritual. If you need money, go to somewhere else. But if you need anything spiritual, you know, advice or help, and that way I'm happy to do that. And as I mentioned last night, because last night we were in Rijeka and the day before we were in Pula, that the business of the GBC is not to manage, but to make sure that the proper spiritual standards are followed. Srila Prabhupada sometimes described the GBC's service as being like a watchdog. Just like as I was walking to the temple today, just a few minutes ago, there were so many dogs that were barking at me. I think this must be also dog loka here, you know, around here. Every house has a ferocious dog, and on the way I had to pick up a stone just to keep the dogs away from me. But I guess that's normal. You're all used to that. So in any case, Prabhupada said the GBC has to be like Prabhupada's watchdog. Prabhupada's watchdog in many ways. One way is to make sure that the proper philosophy is being preached, the devotees are being taken care of. Another way is to make sure that the properties of the ISKCON movement, the International Society of Krishna Conscious Movement, because we're all part of an international society, are being protected, that nobody mismanages the properties and endangers them in any way, and also to make sure the BBT debts are paid, things like that, the proper management standards. But it is up to the local leaders to do the management. The GBC's business is not to manage. The GBC's business is to check, balance, preach, and to help the devotees. So I'm not here to manage, so don't expect me to manage. Don't expect me to solve your managerial problems. Sometimes we go to a place for the first time, and people say, oh, here's the problem, here's the problem. What's the solution? We're not Krishna. We're servants of Krishna. And sometimes I can help a little bit like that, but it is not that we are omniscient or omnipresent or any of these other qualities that are reserved for the Supreme Personality of God. We're simply trying to serve the Vaishnavas. So, on that note, tonight we're going to be reading from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Oh, that's nice. So, we're reading from the 14th chapter, text 15, Bhagavad Gita as it is, that's right. And this chapter is entitled The Three Modes of Material Nature. So, Om Aganat Miranda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshuram Miditam Yena Tasmai Shi Gurave Namaha. So, translation. When one dies in the mode of passion, he takes birth among those engaged in fruitive activities. And when one dies in the mode of ignorance, he takes birth in the animal kingdom. So we can repeat. When one dies in the mode of passion, he takes birth among those engaged in fruitive activities. And when one dies in the mode of ignorance, he takes birth in the animal kingdom. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Some people have the impression that when the soul reaches the platform of human life, it never goes down again. This is incorrect. According to this verse, if one develops the mode of ignorance, after his death he is degraded to an animal form of life. From there, one has to again elevate himself by an evolutionary process to come again to the human form of life. Therefore, those who are actually serious about human life should take to the mode of goodness and in good association transcend the modes and become situated in Krishna consciousness. This is the aim of human life. Otherwise, there is no guarantee that the human being will again attain to the human status. Okay. Rajasi pralayam gatva karma sangi shu jayate tatha pralinas tamasi mura yoni shu jayate. So om ganatim adandasha gananjana shalakaya chakshunan meditam yena tasmai shi gurave namaha. So here is described the process of changing one's body and how it is determined what type of body one gets in the next life. Of course, there's many verses that describe this process in the Bhagavad Gita, particularly the verse Yam Yam Vapi Smaram Bhavan Yajate Ante Kalevram Tantam Vaiti Kantya Sadatad Bhava Bhavataha. I think you all know that verse, right? That verse states that whatever you're thinking of, or whatever state of mind you're in, it doesn't say whatever you're thinking of, it says, yam yam bhapi, smaran bhavam. That means whatever your existence is, whatever state of consciousness you're in, whatever your emotional, just like we know bhava, you understand. Then, jajati ante kalevram. When one is ready at the end of life to give up their body, that consciousness will actually carry him into a body that is in accordance or with the same nature as the consciousness. So other explanations in the Bhagavad Gita are that just like the air that carries aromas from one place to another, carries smells from one place to another, similarly, the subtle body of the living entity carries the consciousness from consciousness and desires from one gross body to another. So there's many different explanations of this. Here, of course, they're talking about the modes of material nature. So you may ask, why is there a necessity of describing the change of bodies in terms of the modes? The reason is that actually, everything in the material world can be described in terms of modes of nature. The combination of the three modes. Just like every color in the spectrum, whether it is black, or whether it is saffron, or whether it is like the white or off-white color of the pages here, can be described in terms of the combination of the three primary colors. You combine three colors, just like you have a computer, and if you have a color screen on the computer, there's three different types of colors there, and they're combining to make all the colors that you can see. So the modes of nature, combined in different ways, make everything that you see manifest. Beginning with the species of life, like Prabhupada would describe, is the three modes of nature times three, that's what, nine, times three, is 27, and then you go on, times 3, times 3, times 3, times 3, and then eventually you get to 8,400,000. Because it's different, what we call, it's a fancy word, permutations or combinations of these different modes. So everything you see here is a particular combination of the modes. Not only everything you see, but every activity, every sound vibration, every type of food, every time of the day. Just like we have our Brahma Muhurta time, which is the ideal time for spiritual life. That's like an hour and a half before sunrise, and we usually have Mangalarti during that time, isn't it? And so that time is the mode of goodness time. And it's very easy to chant and hear, you know, at that time. But after 9 o'clock in the morning, it's harder because there's so much passion in the air at that time. One wants to run around, do this, do that. Therefore, the Brahma Muhurta time is prescribed for all spiritualists. We're not the only movement that gets up early in the morning. You know, people think joining the Hare Krishna movement is torture. You know, getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, this is like worse than dying. Because we're accustomed, what are we accustomed to doing? We're accustomed to waking up at 10 or 11. And then in the weekends, maybe 12, isn't it? Everybody has that experience. So we think, oh, this is, you know, these Hare Krishnas or this process, they're stupid rituals that they have. But each and every ritual has a purpose behind it. You know, people talk also about the four regulated principles. They say, why do they have to pick the four that I'm most attached to? Couldn't they pick, you know, four ones that I wasn't attached to? Like, you know, four regulated principles, don't go skiing. Isn't it? Don't go bungee jumping. You know, things that I have no attachment to. So why do those Hare Krishnas have to pick these, the four that I like the best? Well, there's a reason behind everything. There's a reason behind the four regulated principles, and we could go through each of the four and explain how they put you in the mode of ignorance if you break those principles. Like illicit sex, certainly. Intoxication is an illusion within an illusion. That's what Prabhupada said. You're already an illusion that you think you're the body, and you take intoxication, you think it's a different illusion within the illusion. It's like dreaming. It's an illusion within the illusion. Or gambling. One gets so crazy with a gambling fever that sometimes they go to these places to gamble and they even sell their car and they can't even drive away. I don't know if you have casinos here, but somewhere, I think, in the coast, you have casinos. They get so intoxicated, they gamble, and they finally say, oh, I'm going to win the next time. And then they say, well, here, take my car and give me some money for the car. And then finally they lose their car. And then they have to just, like, take a bus, to borrow money to take a bus. I mean, same thing happened with Maharaj Yudhisthira, didn't it? He was gambling. And he thought, I'm going to win next time. Let me gamble my brothers. And finally, let me gamble my wife. So it's craziness that one gets from gambling. And then meat eating, what to speak of meat eating? You know, you are what you eat. You know, if you eat meat, that really drags your consciousness down to an animal level. So anyway, so talking about the modes of nature. So that has to do a lot with the regulative principles. So we were talking about the time of the day. So the mode of, in the morning, it's a mode of goodness. It's just great for chanting. And because you're in ignorance, you don't like the morning. And because you're in ignorance, you love the evening. Isn't it? You love it. When it gets to be 11 o'clock, you just come alive. Some devotees even tell me, they say, I'm a night person. Did you ever hear that expression? Have you ever heard a devotee say that? Yeah. I'm not a morning person, Prabhu. I'm a night person. And even during the morning program, if there's 2 hours of japa, they'll take at least an hour and a half nap during the 2 hour japa period. You ever seen that? That, you know, you go up, everyone's a Mangalarti, jai, 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 and then 15 minutes of the japa period, you go up to the Brahmachari ashram. Like that. But they become alive at night. And then it's like a magic. At 11 o'clock, the night is still young. You have that expression? The night is still young. So that means ignorance. If someone says I'm a night person, that's like saying I'm influenced by ignorance. You don't want to say that because they'll get insulted. And the statement is, Upadeshu himorkanam prakopaya nashante. If you give a fool good instructions, they get angry with you. So you got to be careful. But we should know that if we're attracted to, you know, just going out at night, doing whatever we like to do, not chanting, of course, but going to the discos, or even just watching videos all night, that means ignorance. So each and every time of the day has a particular mode of nature. Each and every type of food, and that's described also in the Bhagavad Gita. I'm not going to get into it, you know, about foods and the different modes of nature. Each and every different type of determination, each and every type of association. In fact, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that the cause of our entanglement in this material world is karanam guna sangasha sadasad janma jonishu. You ever hear that before? That's a verse from Bhagavad Gita. It says that the cause of our entanglement is guna sangha. That means association with the gunas, the modes of material nature. Sadasad janma jonishu. In this way we're taking birth, jonishu, in this material world. So, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, if we want to become Krishna conscious and renounce this world and get out of this world, then what? Satsanga chage vaishnavachar. We have to learn how to renounce the modes of nature. And also, Krishna says in the 15th chapter of the Gita, What does he say? He says, Nirmana moha jita sanga dosha avyatman nicha vinivritta kama dvandvar vimuktar sukaduka samgyar gachanchi mudha padamaviyam tat. You all know this verse? Anyone know the Bhagavad Gita here? No. Okay. Bhagavad Gita is the book that Krishna wrote 5,000 years ago. So the 15th, Krishna didn't write, he spoke it, I'm sorry, as part of the Mahabharata. So anyway, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that if you want to get out of the material world, after he describes the material world as being a banyan tree, like an upside down banyan tree, he says the methodology to get out is to nirmana moha, give up your false prestige, false pride. Jitta sangha dosha, give up. There's that statement, sangha dosha. Sangha means bad association. Sangha dosha means bad association. Jitta means to conquer it. Jitta. Like Krishna is called ajitta, the person who was never conquered. And jitta sangha dosha means to conquer bad association. So in other words, we have to learn how to avoid bad association to become Krishna conscious. So we don't associate with the modes of nature. The whole material world is like covered with a layer of paint, wet paint, and if you touch it, you get it on you. It's like if the building was just painted and you touch, then you get the same color paint on you. So it's like that with this material world. So, in any case, we have to learn, to avoid the association of the modes of nature, and then on the other hand, how to associate with the transcendental qualities, how to associate with transcendental people. How to associate with pure devotees. And then our Krishna consciousness becomes very, very easy. So whatever consciousness you die in, as it's described here, that determines what happens in your next life. So these are some explanations here, interesting explanations and about the modes of nature. So any questions or comments? Yeah. You understood that? He was not in the mood. Well, there's a Kshatriya code, yes. That when you're challenged, then you have to answer that challenge. That is true. But also, there's no Kshatriya code that demands that you gamble your brothers. You understand? There's no Kshatriya code that demands that you put your wife up in the gambling match. Like that. That is not a Kshatriya code. So that's what I was referring to. But it was under the influence of Yogamaya. And he taught us by that example how bad gambling is and how dangerous gambling is. Yeah? So what's the question? Where is that? Where is that? What scripture is that in? No. I'll tell you why they were silent. Of course, it was all Krishna's plan, ultimately. But Prabhupada said that even these great devotees, their minds became influenced and, let us say, contaminated because they were eating food cooked in the kitchen, Duryodhana's kitchen. That was Prabhupada's statement. So this also, it brings to home or makes the point that I was making in class very strongly, that we have to be careful who or what we associate with. That's why we have the strictures. You know, Prabhupada says that we should eat food cooked by the devotees. Because if you eat food cooked by anyone else, not a devotee or not offered to Krishna, then your mind can be influenced. You understand? The mind can become wicked, in fact, Srila Prabhupada said. So Srila Prabhupada said that was the cause of their involvement or fighting on the wrong side of the battle of Kurukshetra. Now, I know Grandfather Bhishma had taken a vow to uphold and support the king, whoever that may be. He had taken that vow when his father wanted to marry Satyavati. There's this whole story in the Mahabharata. But still, the proper dharmic thing would have been for him to interfere at that point in the gambling match. But he didn't because his mind was influenced by bad association. So Prabhupada makes the point that even if one is a Mahabhagwat, and certainly Grandfather Bhishma was a Mahabhagwat, a great Mahajana, one of the 12 great Mahajanas, Dvadasa Mahajanas, that still one's mind can be influenced by this bad association. So one has to be extremely careful. There's one story that I told the other night. It's a little funny, but it illustrates the point. That once upon a time, there was a priest taking care of the deities. And as he was taking care of the deities, one lady came up and she cooked some offerings for the deities. And this lady happened to be a prostitute. And so she cooked the offering. You know, she was doing sinful things. So she cooked the offering for the deities. She offered it to the deities. And the priests could see that Krishna accepted it. He thought, oh, Krishna's very kind. So then what happened is afterwards he ate some of the remnants of the Lord's meal. And that night he had what we call swapna. That means bad dreams. His mind, he just had all these different, you know, material thoughts, and he was thinking, oh my God, what did I do? And, you know, did I eat something contaminated? And then Krishna appeared to him and he said, my dear priest, my dear Pujari, I can digest whatever people give me, but you can't. I have better digestion than you. So therefore, one should be careful. One should be careful what they eat. Because eating, the process of eating or taking food within the body affects the consciousness practically more than anything else. Because the food, according to the Ayurvedas, is transformed to blood. Blood carries the consciousness around the body. So one has to be careful what they eat. Of course, we have to be careful what we listen to, too. Music. Music, for example, you know, many of us may be attracted to music in the mode of ignorance. What is that like? Was that punk or something like that, or junk, or trash, you know, heavy metal, that's what it's called. Just like I was at a devotee's house the other day, and he said, I want you to, he was a recording engineer. Okay. So he said, I want you to hear this music I'm working on. And he played some heavy metal music for me. And it goes, boom, 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 boom. And I said, when I hear that, I just want to, you know, it makes, puts me in the mood wanting to punch someone or something like that. I said, imagine what it is. I asked him, how do people dance to this music? What style do they do? And he explained the type of dancing they do to the music is they take their bodies and slam them against each other. You ever heard of this before? Slam dancing. I don't know anything about it because I joined the Hare Krishna movement in 1971 during the Satya Yuga. So, you know, Kali Yuga came a little later. So, but I was seeing how the music, you know, even if I listened to the music a little bit, it would influence the consciousness. You know, it makes you feel like, you know, punching someone when you listen to it. So we have to be careful what we hear, because hearing, another point is that Lord Kapiladeva says, Bhavanti Ritkarna Rasayana Katha. This is a verse about hearing Krishna Katha. He said there is a channel between the ear and the heart. And when you hear something impure, it enters from the ear to the heart directly. So also when you hear Krishna Katha purely chanted, then it goes right to the heart. Just like I remember this summer, I was in Rijeka at the Rath Yatra, and Sachinanda Maharaj was chanting, and he was chanting purely. He always chants purely. And we felt so much happiness just by hearing his chanting that we felt we had died and gone back to Godhead. You understand? You understand that expression? And then later on I found out, unfortunately, I had not gone back to Godhead after the kirtan was over, but that's another thing. So the point is that if we hear from someone pure, then it really enters the heart and just transforms our heart and our consciousness into Vaikuntha, pure, ecstatic consciousness. And if we hear from something or someone who is impure, then it transforms the heart in the opposite way, in the modes of nature. Hare Krishna. So, anyway, so that explains. Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yes. But he wants us, some people to wait a little longer. Yeah, Krishna, ultimately he wants everyone to go back, but he may be thinking, you know, this person better wait another 10 births, you know. He needs a little bit more purification. But then Krishna's devotee can give that bhakti. If he wants, he can give that bhakti. Just like we, Prabhupada explains, Radharani, if she says to Krishna, please accept this devotee, Krishna doesn't have any choice. Because Krishna is controlled by Srimati Radharani. So the pure devotee, as we were mentioning in the seminar at Madhurya Kadambadi, what happens when one attains prema? Do you remember? What is one of the first things that happens when you get prema? I'm not saying you remember because you have prema. That's not what I'm asking. You know, but I'm asking about the seminar, not about your prema. Well, no, there's something specific I mentioned that really indicates you have Krishna prema. Does anyone remember? Who was there at my seminar this summer? So, what do you remember? What happens when one gets prema? That's good that you're on the right track. So anyone remember? What? Yeah. Happy? But then, no, you're happy in other stages too. That happens before prema. So, what happens? What does Krishna say to one when one attains prema? Wow. So many months later. So, anyway, so Krishna, yeah. Krishna says, when you attain prema, the first thing that practically happens is Krishna appears to you and says, now I am conquered by you, I am controlled by you. You remember that now? That's what I said in the seminar. That Krishna says, now I'm under your control. I'm yours and you're mine. So a pure devotee has that, you know, he can control, he doesn't want to control Krishna. He loves Krishna. He wants to be controlled by Krishna. But that's the first thing that happens. So when a pure devotee wants to give you prema, Krishna will allow that. Yeah. The soul is the spiritual body. There's no difference. In the material world, there is a duality. There is the body and the soul, which is in the heart of the material body. Actually, the soul is not, let's say, in touch with the matter. The soul is always transcendental to the matter. But because the soul is attached to the body, the soul experiences the body as if it were its himself or herself. It is only due to attachment that we think we are this body. Otherwise, there is no connection. Just like, I'll give the example, if we are sitting here in class, and all of a sudden you hear a crash outside, and you run outside to see what the problem is, and then you see that your car has been smashed, you will feel pain. Maybe pain in the heart. And you feel anxiety and pain. Because you're attached to the car. But if you run outside and you see his car has been smashed, you think it is funny and interesting. You understand? So it is because of attachment that we're experiencing pain and pleasure from this body. Because we're attached to it. If we weren't attached to it, it would be just like a car that doesn't belong to us. It's described in the Bhagavad Gita that one in Krishna consciousness, while he sees his body is like sitting up, lying down, sleeping, eating, he knows that he himself is not doing any of these things. The soul is not doing any of these things. So that's the material body. But as far as the spiritual body, there's no duality. The body and the self are the same. The self and the emotions are the same. In our material bodies, we're different from our emotions. Actually, many emotions can come about just by a chemical change in the body. is like what we think is in the material world is love is actually just a what we call the endocrine system functioning. You know, endocrine? Anyway, some of the glands in the body. Yeah, yeah. Like the hypothalamus. Anyone know biology here? There's a part of the brain called the hypothalamus, which is the primitive area of the brain. And when you fall in love with someone, that primitive area starts dancing. So it's just the body, because you're attached, you think, you know, I'm in love. Right? That's life. So if we're not attached, you'll just think, you know, the body, just the body. So it's a question. So how do we give up the attachment to the body, this physical body? Anyway, let's continue with your question. So the spiritual body is the same as the self, and it's already there. We just have to realize it. And the reason we can't realize it is the same reason that I can't see if my glasses. Sometimes we go into a place that's very warm after we've been in a place that's very cold, and the glasses get like that, and I can't see. My eyes are good. What's on the other side is good, but my glasses are, and they're not working. You know, they're covered with fog. So the same way that there's a spiritual body there, and we just have to clean the mirror of the heart, not the glasses. It'd be easy just cleaning glasses to see the spiritual body. So like, oh, there's my spiritual body. That would be a simple thing to do. But we have to clean the mirror of the heart. And guess what? When you clean the mirror of the heart, just like the sun rising in the morning, when it rises, you can see everything. In the same way, when the mirror of the heart becomes cleansed, then you can see everything. You can see your spiritual body and understand who you are. That's why one shouldn't prematurely try to understand their spiritual identity. Because if they do, what will you do with it until you can actually have a cleaned heart? For example, let's say if I was to tell one of you what your spiritual identity was in the spiritual world. Everyone has a spiritual identity. There's five different relationships, right? There's Shantaras, Dasharas, that means a peaceful relationship. There's a servant relationship, the friend relationship, the parent relationship, and the conjugal lover relationship. So let's say I was to say to one of the men here what their relationship was in the spiritual world, or I say, okay, you are a cow in the spiritual world. So he won't know what to do about that. He may just like get down like this and start walking around and going, moo, moo. What would he do? Or if I said, he's a gopi, what would he do? He's going to go to the ladies and borrow a sari and start putting on. People do that. It's really funny, you know. If you go to Vrindavan, you'll see sometimes, one time I was there, there was one man who thought he'd become a gopi by putting on a sari, and he had put lipstick on and, you know, everything on there. But he still had a little bit of beard on his face, so it didn't look... He was not such an attractive gopi. So, the point is, that's why we don't tell people, even if we know, what their spiritual relationship... It's something that's revealed. When you can see, when you clean the mirror, you can see what you look like. When you clean the mirror of the heart, you can see what your spiritual body is. And then you execute devotional service on what we call the Raghunuga platform, which is the spontaneous platform. Okay? That's a good question. Very, very good question. So any other questions? Yes. Well, if one's duty puts them in touch with the lower modes, just like Arjuna was put in touch with the mode of passion, being a kshatriya, right? Arjuna was engaged in what? Killing and fighting and competition. And he wanted to give that up, right? Isn't that true? In Bhagavad Gita, we find that Arjuna, he wanted to give that up and go to the forest. And Krishna said to him that better you fight for me, because by your own nature, you're going to be forced to fight anyway. There's an interesting story in the Mahabharata. One time Arjuna was engaged in meditating and performing austerities. You know, chanting Om Namo Shivaya because he was worshipping Lord Shiva. And then what happened was that as he was meditating, a big boar came up. You know what a boar is? A big pig. That's a type of a pig with big tusks on it. And it started to run at him and to kill him. And so Arjuna pulled his bow and arrow out as he was trying to meditate and shot it at the boar. At the same time, he saw another arrow hit the boar. And he looked up and there was a hunter there. So instead of thinking, like most of us would say, thank you very much, Mr. Hunter, for protecting me, right? Isn't it? I would say that. I would just say, thank you, you know, God, thank you. But Arjuna said, no, why did you shoot? I hit him first. And the hunter said, no, I hit him first. And Arjuna said, I hit him first. You rascal for shooting your arrow when I wanted to shoot it. And that's a passionate type of mentality, isn't it? And then as a result, they started a fight between themselves, and Arjuna was firing arrows at the hunter, and none of the arrows could touch the hunter. Finally, the arrows ran out. Arjuna tried to take his bow and do something with the hunter. Then he was wrestling with the hunter, and it's described that sparks were flying from both of their bodies as they were wrestling. And finally, Arjuna collapsed on the ground. And then when he collapsed on the ground, he thought, well, at least I should worship Lord Shiva. He made a little linga of Lord Shiva and was worshiping, put a garland on it, and he saw that the hunter had the same garland on him. Then he understood the hunter was Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva was pleased, of course. But the story, the reason I told that story was it illustrates that even though Arjuna tried to meditate as a good brahmana and control his senses, he was forced to, you know, fight when it came time, when just one pig was hit. I mean, that's Kshatriya Dharma. We all have different natures. We're either Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, and we have to admit that. And if we serve Krishna according to that nature, do our duty, even if we have to come in contact with people of a lower nature or our workers of a different nature, we won't be affected if we serve Krishna out of devotion. Amam chiyobhyabhacharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samati chaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. So, yes, you won't be affected, but we have to understand we have different modes of nature and we should do our duty. You can't imitate or you shouldn't do someone else's duty. And there's no problem. Krishna will take care. I mean, if you're a Vaishya and have to engage in money and trade and commerce, that's fine. Krishna will protect you. You're just like sometimes in my job is I don't have to work on the outside, of course, but, you know, I have to work with so many different management things. You know, in the GBC, you have to be concerned with chastising people sometimes, you rascal. Or, you know, how much money does a temple have? And so sometimes we think, I have to do all these things. When am I going to get time to go back to Godhead? Or when am I going to get time to be Krishna conscious? Of course, we read and chant, too. We understand that. But so we may be thinking, you know, let me give it up. Let me just give it up and just go to Vrindavan and sit under a tree and chant Hari Bol. Some of you may want to do that. That wasn't Prabhupada's mood. Prabhupada actually said that preacher means in the mood of like a fighter. And Prabhupada said he wanted to leave this world fighting like Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So that's our business. Like that. And then Krishna takes care of us. We have to have faith that if we're doing what Krishna wants, even if it means mixing with things that are not precisely the highest modes of nature, then Krishna will take care of us. If we're doing our duty according to what Krishna wants, Krishna will take care of us. All right? So don't worry. Be happy. And chant. Yeah. Any other questions or comments? Yes. Well, that's easy. That's an easy question. A good question, but an easy question. Because we ask Krishna's representatives. We're not only talking about the spiritual master, but advanced devotees. When Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami wanted to write the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he went to the Vaishnavas to take permission. He didn't just think, hey, Krishna wants it, I should do it. And then he went to the deity, and the deity, of course, gave him the garland. Madan Mohan Vigraha gave him the garland. So that's why we need the association of devotees. Like before I do anything, anything really serious, I ask my godbrothers. I said, you know, what do you think I should do? Do you think I should do this, or do you think I should do that? And based on their advice, we make our decisions. That's why we have an association. Prabhupada said that we are all like sticks that can be broken very easily, but when you put many sticks together, they can't be broken. That's why we keep each other's association. If you're outside the association of devotees, it's very dangerous. So any other questions? Yes. My experience in Vrindavan? Do you want to really hear the stories? You want to hear Rasika's story. But instead I'll tell you a story that's a little interesting. Alright, you want to hear about Vrindavan? How you have to be careful in Vrindavan. I'm going to tell you a story about how you have to be careful in Vrindavan, what you say and what you think. Okay? Now, I'm going to tell you what I want to tell you. You want to hear about Radha and Krishna, but I'm going to tell you about something different. So, once upon a time I was in Vrindavan. And being in Vrindavan, I was with a group of devotees. And some of the devotees were making me upset. And I didn't want to go on pilgrimage with them. So I said, I was a little upset. I said, please, Krishna, make an arrangement so I don't have to go on pilgrimage with these devotees. The next thing I knew, I was in the hospital. Vrindavan is heavy. You have to be careful what you say, what you desire. And so I didn't have to go on pilgrimage with the devotees. I got a chance just to sit and read, or I couldn't sit, I'm sorry. But I got a chance to lie down and read for a week. So that's Vrindavan. Radharani's in charge of Vrindavan. So you have to be very careful in Vrindavan. What you say, what you think, what you ask for. And every tree in Vrindavan is a desire tree. But it also depends on how strong your desire is. You understand? I'll give you another funny example. Because you want to hear about Radha and Krishna, but I'm not going to do that right now. But I'll give you another funny example. That I was in Vrindavan one time, and I had a friend of mine. He was about 50 years old. And he was thinking of getting remarried. So I went to the desire tree, and I prayed to the desire tree that he not get remarried. I embraced the desire tree. I said, my dear desire tree, please, he should not marry. He's too old. He's already been married. Please. And I told the friend, I said, I'm just praying for you. And this friend said, do not pray like that, Maharaj. So then he went to the desire tree right after me and embraced it and was praying harder than me. So then when we got back from Vrindavan, he was married very shortly after that. So the point I'm making is that the strength of the desire is the important thing. So if you desire something, every tree is a desire tree in Vrindavan, Krishna will fulfill that desire if you actually desire it strongly. And of course the statement, this very much goes in line with our devotional philosophy, that loyam, intense hankering, or greed is the price of pure devotional service. This is a statement by Srila Rupa Goswami, that greed is the sign or the way that one falls down into the material world or leaves devotional service, one of the causes of fall down, isn't it? But it's also one of the causes of spiritual upliftment or spiritual advancement or attaining pure devotional service, having greed for it. So our desire to be Krishna conscious should be so intense, and then Krishna will fulfill that desire. So that's desire trees in Vrindavan. So these are Vrindavan stories. Now, I'm not going to talk about Krishna and the gopis tonight. It's not you could just push a Krishna and the gopi button, you know.
Well, all the Shastras, like
Well, I'm sure he's a nice devotee. I'm not criticizing him, but I'm saying the tendency to stay up late at night means the late night time is the mode of ignorance time, and the early morning time is the mode of goodness time. Yeah, there's a mix. Like, yeah, there's a mix. Prabhupada even said, he said, as far as you Westerners, you're a mixed caste of unknown origin. He said, Prabhupada actually said that. You understand? You understand your language? Mixed caste. You know, we want to know. Am I a Brahmin, a Kshatriya, Shudra, Vaishya? And Prabhupada said, no, you're a mixed caste of unknown origin. So yeah, we're quite a mix. It really is a mix. It's like a brew, you know, like witch's brew or something like that. Therefore we have to be very careful about our being strict in our sadhana. Because if we're not strict in our sadhana, then those previous mix can just like then make us mixed up again. That's nice. That's fine. That doesn't mean he's in the mode of ignorance. Like one of the greatest devotees in our movement, Jayananda Prabhu, he was always fixing the cars. And he was a pure devotee. I went to the temple in San Francisco in 1973. That's before you were born. What year were you born? Yeah, the same year you were born. So I went to the temple in San Francisco. Visit. I was a brahmachari. And when said 1973, and I said, "Where's the temple president?" And they said, "Well, he's in the garage underneath the car." So I went, "Hello," and I was speaking to him. He was a great saint. Another story about Jayananda was that he always take out the garbage too. And so sometimes some people came to the temple, and they were talking to him, and he was telling about Krishna. And the people said, "Boy, this is a great religion. I mean, even your garbage men are just great devotees." What to speak of, you know, the people who are in the temple. So the point is that we're servants. Gopi Bharata Padakamala Dasa Dasa Dasa. We're not Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. We're servants. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that. So, as far as Varnashram is concerned, yes, we may have to set an example for Varnashram, but we should always understand that our position is servants, and we have to be ready to do whatever Krishna wants. There's a saying in Spanish, because I speak Spanish too, that said, a servant is called a para todos. Does anyone here speak Spanish? No, no one speaks Spanish. That means someone who could do anything. It's used as a negative term, you know. You say, they'll do anything. Like that. Ugh, like that. They're just like, oh, Shudra. Do anything. All right. So, sometimes we get people from, anyway, so we got some devotees from South America one time, and they were from a very high class family. And even when they put on their dhoti, they would tie their dhoti like a tie here or something like that. Like a cravat. You know what a cravat is? Like a French tie or something like that. They wear like that, you know, very sophisticated. And so, you know, sometimes I asked them, would you like to clean? And they said, what do you think I am? A para todos? One of those. Like that. I said, when I was young, I had someone to tie my shoelaces for me. You know, brush my teeth for me. So anyway, so it's very hard when people have this conception that I am a, you know, it's a designation that I am a elevated personality somehow or other. So what I did was that I made them do construction work. I put this poor devotee up, shoveling concrete. And he learned. He got his tie a little dirty, but he learned that we're actually supposed to serve Krishna. When I joined the movement, here's another example. When I joined the movement, I was very happy to go in and clean Krishna's pots. Does everybody remember that when you first joined the movement? You're told clean the pots, clean the bathroom, clean the floor, and so happy. Oh yes, Krishna's giving me this service. But then after some time in the movement, you begin to think, I'm too good for those things. Like if I say to some of you now, go to the kitchen and clean the pots. Huh. Does he know who I am? Does he know how many years I have in this movement? What does he think I am? But actually, we're always supposed to maintain that humble mood of being servant. If Krishna says clean the pots, we should be as happy as we were the first day we joined the Hare Krishna movement. So that's the point. You understand? We're servants. So if Krishna says fix the car, fine. Get the car. Then that person is a good pujari who does that. But if the person is pujari with false pride, like Lord Kapiladeva describes it, a devotee in the mode of passion, he worships the deities for his own adoration. In other words, he's dressing the deities, he or she is dressing the deities, so that people can say, oh, how nice you dressed, Krishna. How nice you are. In other words, they're not so much interested in Krishna, they're interested in their own false pride. So we are interested in servants. We want to become servants. That's Gopi Bharata Padakama Ladasa Dasa Dasanudasa, right? We're servants of a servant of a servant of the Lord who maintains the gopis in Vrindavan. So we should cultivate that mood. I am not a sannyasi. I am not this. I am not Kiva, but, you know, like Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I'm not a sannyasi. I'm not this. I'm not that. I'm Gopi Bharata. I am a servant of a servant of a servant of the Lord. That's how we should think. And if you think you're not servant, then you're in Maya. If you think you're master. Just like, you know, if I think I'm master, just like if someone is a spiritual master and they think they're a master, then Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, instead of guru, they're guru. Instead of a guru, they're a cow or an ass. Because they're thinking, I'm a master. You know, who are you, master? That's just like that Romaharshana Sutta. You know that story? Romaharshana Sutta was sitting on a big seat, thinking himself the master. Balaram walks in. Hi, Balaram. Like that. You know, didn't cut up to offer respects. And Balaram says, oh, this guy's not qualified. And he took a little piece of grass. Killed him. So we're servants. So don't worry. You don't become a shudra by cleaning cars. Or fixing cars. No. Actually, the real point about Varnashram is whatever propensity you have, you should utilize that in Krishna's service. It may not be necessary to designate people, you know, will tattoo you, you know. Nowadays they use tattoos. Your tattoos?
Yeah, like concentration.
Concentration camp, yeah. Yeah, concentration. Shudra! And we'll have you live downstairs. And dig out a hole in the basement for you. So, no. The whole point is whatever you do nicely, you should do for Krishna. If you're an intellectual, you do it for Krishna. If you like fixing cars, you do it for Krishna. And then we're all Vaishnavas. That's all. I mean, simple thing. I don't think we're going to establish like a stratified society, at least not in our lifetimes. You stratify where everybody gets this particular designation. So I wouldn't worry about it. You just try to love Krishna and do what Krishna wants. And if Krishna says to do something, you have to do it. Like that. Like the statement sometimes we use, if the spiritual master says, jump, you don't say, why, you say, how high. You understand the difference? That's a difference. Yeah. Okay, I think we have to end. Sorry, 8 o'clock. We started early so we can end early, and then we went on for a little while. So anyway, so we're going to be giving class tomorrow morning, tomorrow evening, and I don't know about the next morning because we're taking a train to Serbia the next morning, but at least tomorrow morning and tomorrow evening we'll be speaking. And I'm available to talk to the devotees if they have any questions about the Hare Krishna movement. I'm very happy to be here. Okay, all glory is to His divine grace, Srila Prabhupada.